Tim McNally. Welcome to the Dine, Wine, and Spirit Show, NOLA Drinks Edition. Here's your host, Brian Diaz.
All right, everybody. Welcome to the NOLA Drinks Edition of the Dine, Wine, and Spirit Show here on WGSO 990 AM New Orleans. Brian Diaz here with you today. Happy to be here with you today. Welcome to the unofficial start of the weekend. Happy carnival season, everybody. Happy New Year. All that good stuff. Happy to be here doing the show. I was in here yesterday for my good friend Tim McNally, filling in for him, and I'll be doing so tomorrow and Monday as well. But we are on the NOLA Drinks Edition of the show. Hey, again, great to be here. Got a good show coming up for you today. Very excited about it. We're going to be talking to Joey Worley from Windsor Court Hotel fairly soon. They got a new coffee program going on. And, you know, coffee, it's a thing. We, you know, this is the NOLA Drinks edition of the show. And, you know, drinks. So we're not just beer, wine, and spirits. We're also coffee. And we've talked about coffee quite a bit here on the show, actually. And one of the things that actually I do like to talk about here on the show with coffee is that people may not know this here in New Orleans, and we actually, on Tim's show yesterday when I was filling in for him, we had the French Market Coffee Company on. New Orleans is one of the largest coffee ports in the country, and for decades, really for a long, long time, a huge amount of coffee has actually passed through the port here, but very little roasting of coffee goes on in New Orleans, and it's kind of being rediscovered. A lot of stuff comes in and it's shipped out, or and you know, actually a lot of the coffee outside of French Market Coffee, and there's a few other folks, French Truck comes to mind, which is a fine coffee shop over there in Magazine, I think they are. They do their own roasting. So a lot of stuff actually comes in here and then it ends up leaving and going somewhere else. And even a lot of the coffee that people consume here, you know, not in the chain stores or anything like that, of course, but in some restaurants to a certain degree, that stuff's actually brought in from the outside. So it's stuff that maybe even passes through the port, ends up being roasted somewhere else, and then ends up back in New Orleans. And I think we're starting to get back to that roasting coffee thing and do the local thing. And there's a lot of good companies that are doing that out there. So we'll, and I'm not saying that Windsor Court's roasting coffee, don't get me wrong, but they got a new coffee program over there at Windsor Court. We're going to talk with Joey about that. That'll be pretty cool. And then we're also going to talk to Jorge De La Rosa from Bin 428 a little bit later on in the hour. And they have an interesting wine tasting that's actually going on this evening. If you're listening to the podcast, I apologize because it's probably yesterday that you're hearing this, or when the wine tasting is, or later. But it's Thursday tonight, January 12th from 6 to 8 p.m. And it's Bedrock Wine Company, which is out of Sonoma. And a good up-and-coming winery. So their winemaker and, I believe, owner, Chris Cottrell, is going to be there pouring wines at Bin 428. We're going to talk to Jorge, who runs the shop there at Bin 428, a little bit about the tasting and a little bit about what makes Bedrock Wines unique, which I think will be an interesting conversation. And then in the second hour, I'm going to have a guest on all the way up from New York, Gino Colangelo. And Gino runs Colangelo PR. Okay, and here we go. I always have to explain stuff. You're thinking, why is there a PR company actually coming on the show to talk about stuff? Well, a big cog in the alcohol industry and the wheel, especially when we're talking about stuff that comes from outside the country and even often within the country, are PR companies. And Colangelo PR is one of the more noted PR companies in the country that deals with alcohol. They do wine and spirits. I'm not sure if they do beer. We'll get into that with Gino. But we're going to talk a lot about trends in the alcohol business. And Gino's a really bright guy. He's had his finger on the pulse of the industry for a long time. I think you'll find the conversation very interesting, as we're going to talk about kind of where things are and where things are going here in 2017. And I promise you that Gino will have a ton of insight into that. So that's going to be a really fascinating conversation. Always looking forward to that. Folks, a few things going on around town that I want to highlight. Film festival here coming up this weekend, and it is put on by Laura Martoni and her husband Dan, and they used to live here in the French Quarter. I don't know where they've absconded to now, but they're doing a film festival here on Saturday and Sunday, the 14th and 15th, the Big Easy International Film Festival and the Big Easy Shorts Festival. Kerry Irish Pub is what I'm trying to say, kind of a mush mouth, is at 331 Decatur there in the Quarter, just down from us here, and it's a program that's going to run on from noon to 5 on Saturday and 11:30 to 5 on Sunday. All the screenings are free. I don't have a whole heck of a lot of information about exactly what's going to be shown. I know that there's going to be some film stuff shown, longer stuff, and then some short stuff being shown. You can actually just go to www.BigEasyInternationalFilmFestival.com and also www.BigEasyShortsFestival.com and find out a little bit more about that. Check that out free. I know it's going to be New Orleans-oriented stuff. I was just sent along this just right before I came on the air and wanted to make sure that I mentioned that Laura's a good person and they're doing good things with the film festival. So check that out. And I'm sure you're going to see something good. Also, really want to highlight the third annual Danny Barker Banjo and Guitar Festival. Friends, if you're from New Orleans and into music, you know who Danny Barker is. Danny Barker is the raconteur of New Orleans music. His career spanned 70 plus years. He played in multiple genres, was a true pioneer of New Orleans music in so many ways, more than just being a musician playing with other people. But as far as what he did, he was a mentor essentially to people like Wynton Marsalis, Leroy Jones, Greg Stafford, Dr. Michael White, who is now in and of himself a mentor, Lucien Barbarin. This is the third annual one. It keeps getting better and it keeps getting bigger. That kicks off today. And there's stuff going on. A lot of the stuff's going on at Rampart Street. So stuff going on this evening at Little Gem Saloon, which is at 445 South Rampart Street. There's going to be a lot of stories about Danny Barker going on there and his wife, Blue Lou Barker, who is also a character and an important person and figure in New Orleans music. There's some stuff going on at Snug Harbor. There's some stuff going on at Bullets Sports Bar, believe it or not. There's stuff going on over the next few days connected to the Danny Barker Banjo and Guitar Festival. If you're interested in more, check out DannyBarkerFestival.com. This is a person that if you are, again, into New Orleans culture and you are into New Orleans music, you need to know who Danny Barker is. BJ's here working the board as he does. We'll get BJ to pull up some Danny. We have some Danny Barker music. Let's play a Tutti Ma there by the Baby Dodds Trio because that's Danny Barker. And we're going to do that on the outro if we can pull that up. There we go. That's it right there. Look at BJ pulling that up, doing a fine job here on the show. And yeah, go check that out. That's absolutely worthwhile. There's a new book that was actually just put out, and it's actually in a new edition with a new foreword and a lot of added stuff. And it's called Danny Barker, A Life in Jazz. That was published by the New Orleans Historic Collection somewhat recently. My lovely wife gave it to me on my birthday recently. I have not had a chance to read it, but it goes through so much of the history of New Orleans music because of Danny's deep connection to it, as well as his time in New York and other things. It's, I'm sure, a fascinating read, very timely, of course. So go check that out, DannyBarkerFestival.com. So, folks, here's what we're going to do on the Dine, Wine, and Spirit Show, the NOLA Drinks Edition. We're going to take a little bit of a break, and we're going to come right back with Joey Worley from Windsor Court Hotel. And anyway, come out with a little Baby Dawes Trio and a little Danny Barker. Come on back.
Oregon wines are taking over New Orleans. The reason? They're delicious. Next time you're shopping for wine, grab a bottle of Sass Wine. Located in the South Salem Hills of Oregon's Willamette Valley, Sass Wine produces small amounts of handcrafted, high-quality wines that include Pinot Noir, Pinot Blanc, Pinot Gris, Chardonnay, Riesling, Sauvignon Blanc, and Rosé of Syrah. A perfect balance of full fruit with fine, supple tannins and firm acidity is what makes truly great wines, and you'll find that in every bottle of Sass Wine you drink.
Hi, New Orleans. It's Laura from Sobu, and I'm here with Chef Juan Carlos.
Sobu's got happier hour. It's 3 to 6 from 3 to 6.
It's bar bars, sips, and snacks, all for $3 to $6 from 3 to 6 p.m. every day.
Laura's got something to please everyone at the bar for happier hour, all for 3 to 6 here at Sobu.
And we know you'll want to try a smoky pulled pork taco or any of the other delicious snacks on our Happier Hour menu.
Sobu's Happier Hour, every day from 3 to 6, 310 Charter Street in the Quarter.
Complimentary parking next door at the W Hotel.
Springtime in New Orleans is beckoning us back on our front porches, favorite patio bars and restaurants. Dickie Brennan's Tableau offers some of the best outdoor dining in the French Quarter. Soak in the beautiful weather on the balcony overlooking Jackson Square or by the whispering fountain in the cozy courtyard. Tableau also offers an amazing happy hour from 2 to 6 p.m. every day of the week, offering half-price beer and wine on tap, $5 classic cocktails, and discounted small plates. For menus, reservations, and more, visit TableauFrenchQuarter.com. Tableau is located at 616 St. Peter Street.
All right, everybody, welcome back to the NOLA Drinks edition of the Dine, Wine, and Spirit Show here on WGSO 990 AM. Brian Diaz here with you. Happy Thursday, everybody. Again, welcome to the unofficial start of the weekend. Here we go. And hey, we're talking to Joey Worley over there at Windsor Court. Joey, are you there?
Hey, Brian, how are you?
I'm good, man. How's it going?
Oh, so far so good. You know, we're just rocking and rolling into the carnival season. You know, it's how it goes here in New Orleans, right? It's kind of one season leads to the next and on to the next and so forth, right?
You know it, man. There is no rest for the wicked here, right? I mean,
exactly.
Absolutely. You know, you're kind of thinking, okay, holidays are over. I'm going to dry out. Nah.
Nah, it doesn't happen. Maybe for a few days, but not for an extended period of time.
Exactly. Exactly. Then we go to festival season, and then, you know, then it's summer, then you just got to sit indoors and consume something. Right,
right? Exactly.
So you're doing well, man? You had a good New Year, and everything's going good?
Yeah, everything's good. We had a, you know, great, you know, lots of nice crowds at the hotel, you know, in December, and, you know, we actually celebrated the opening of a new outlet here in the hotel, Cafe Anglais, which is our specialty coffee and sort of to-go, you know, food option here. You know, we seem like we send a lot of business to PJs and to Starbucks, and you know, no offense to them, you know, those are two particularly PJs, you know, a great, you know, iconic coffee enterprise here in New Orleans. But you know, we wanted to you know, keep the business within our own four walls, and you know, lots of our guests and lots of our local customers were sort of, you know, just looking for that quick kind of grab and go type of scenario. So you know, we partnered with a you know, a great design firm in Montgomery Roth Interior Design. We had a great contractor, Karimi Construction, that kind of oversaw the project for us. And you know, voila, we opened November 28th, actually. You know, right after Thanksgiving, right before you know, right before we got into the thick of the holiday season. And you know, it's been great so far. Great feedback from, you know, from our customers. You know, we're very lucky at the hotel. We have a lot of you know, very loyal regular customers, be that locals, be that, you know, business travelers that we see several times a month, and you know, really kind of across the boards. You know, there's been, you know, really, really great feedback on that. So we're excited. It's off to a good start. We just got to keep the foot on the gas.
Yeah, man. Well, you know, one of the things, Joey, that I was just talking about at the top of the show, and I've talked about on the show before, in particular, is that, you know, New Orleans is and has been a major coffee port in the country forever. And I think a lot of people don't necessarily know that, because a lot of stuff passes through here, ends up going somewhere else. And then very often, lots of times, coffee actually ends up coming back here roasted by somebody else and things. But, you know, outside of the sort of the obvious of like French market coffee and these things, you know, blending it with chicory and this sort of stuff, a lot of people don't know, when you go get a fine cup of coffee, it could have very well gone through the port of New Orleans.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, and so and with your coffee program, what y'all are doing there, tell me a little bit about it. Like, who's doing the coffee for y'all? And
sure. Well, we've got a really great partnership that's going on with Cafe Anglais with French Truck Coffee.
Yeah, sure. There you go. Okay.
They are, you know, and I mean, I think, you know, you see them more and more in you know, fine dining establishments and casual dining establishments, and I think really that speaks to sort of the versatility of what they offer and sort of the method. You know, method to their, you know, their productivity.
Their coffee madness. We'll call it their coffee madness.
Yeah,
that's all right.
Say that, I guess. I think they'd agree. I actually spent the guys there were Jeffrey and Michael. Jeffrey's the founder and the chief of the company, and then Michael's their director of education. I spent a morning with them, just kind of, you know, in their shop on Magazine Street. They're at 1200 Magazine, and you know, they got a beautiful facility there. They taught me a lot about you know, different beans and how they source, you know, beans really from all parts of the world. Really every coffee growing area in the world is looked at by them, and they, you know, they have direct relationships with farmers, you know, which makes pricing you know, a little bit easier on all of us. It makes, you know, the sustainability of the farm and the land a little bit better, and you know, I was very impressed with sort of A to Z their, you know, their methodology and, you know, their really their level of knowledge, you know, with how they go about their business. And you know, that's one of the reasons we selected them, and we you know, we talked to a lot of different, you know, purveyors of coffee, and you know, felt that the local approach was definitely the right, you know, the right fit for us. And I mean, it's been great so far. You know, they've been fantastic to work with.
Yeah, you know, and Joe, and real quick, Joey, because one of the things that I think is important to note is, and I did mention this at the top of the show as well, is, again, you know, the major, idea of the coffee port here in New Orleans. French Truck Coffee, and I'm glad you're using those guys, they're one of maybe three or four, right, in the whole city that are actually doing their own roasting. And I think that's an important part of this.
No, it definitely is. And that's, you know, something that they're in their sales process, they made, you know, pretty pretty obvious to us, and sort of the more I learned about the, you know, the situation, I mean, that's a big deal, you know, to do that. I mean, really, you know, coffee beans, depending on, you know, where you get them from and you know, which part of the world they come from, you know, they can have very similar characteristics. Really, it's all about the roast, you know, and how, you know, how hot or, you know, the temperature, the duration, you know, all these different things. You know, it comes down to the type of equipment that you use, you know, how it's calibrated. You know, there's quite a bit of, you know, you wouldn't think how much science and sort of precision, you know, goes into, you know, the coffee that you're drinking that you get every morning that you, you know, it's just kind of part of your routine.
But yeah, you know, and you kind of, Joe, you know this too, people maybe kind of take it for granted sometimes. And I think that, and you know, sort of like a good cup of coffee from a bad cup of coffee, but kind of, I think what we're talking about here in a sense is that I like to compare it to wine. And just as you said, so where it comes from, it is terroir driven. Okay. So whatever region it comes from, growing conditions, actually how the plants themselves are managed, just like a vine would be, matters. And then it's sort of the same thing, you know, the analog would be put it in the cellar, and it's what kind of and how much oak do I put on it,
right?
All this kind of stuff, and that matters a ton in a program.
Absolutely. No, it does. And those guys, again, I mean, you know, hats off to them. I mean, it's a fantastic product. And, you know, I think it's something that's, I'm behind them 100%. I hope they continue to expand and grow and, you know, because they really do have an excellent product that's, you know, it's working for us very well. And I know they're seeing success all across the city with it. So
that's pretty exciting. And I mean, you guys do a really good beverage program there just across the board at the hotel. So it seemed to me that adding a quality coffee program really is just kind of a natural fit, right?
It is. You know, I think that, you know, you hit the nail on the head. You know, when you talk about just beverages in general, you know, we've got a phenomenal wine list, you know, excellent list of, you know, scotches, bourbons, you know, sherry, Madeira, you know, things like that. You know, and it's something that we, you know, sort of A to Z, we think about all different things. We, you know, thoughtfully consider the type of bottled water that we carry, you know, all those different things. And so, yeah, to add the, you know, to add the coffee component, and, you know, I don't want to, you know, certainly not mention the, you know, the tea component here as well. You know,
for sure.
We're quite a big, you know, house, you know, particularly during the holidays, you know, with our traditional English tea service, you know, there's a lot of thought that goes into that. And really the, you know, Café Anglais, the, you know, we all, you know, it's, I think, you know, casually referred to as a coffee shop, but, you know, we do offer a variety of hot teas. You know, we started with six hot teas, and we actually had to expand that selection because they were, you know, they were so popular. People were asking for, you know, for different stuff in that regard. So, you know, I think it's just it's a great extension, like you said, of the beverage program here. And, you know, again, we're really happy that it's working out the way it is. And we're very grateful and appreciative of all the support in the community for it so far.
Yeah. You know, Joe, and as you mentioned, thank you for mentioning that, because, you know, you guys are, I'll say, locally famous, and I know other people that come to visit you from elsewhere with the tea program. I mean, you're sort of that's what you're noted for, and it's sort of another one of those things where I think sometimes it's like coffee, where people don't necessarily think about, oh, tea. You know, what does that mean? Where does it sort of come from? And actually, this is serious stuff. I mean, tea, serious stuff. Coffee, serious stuff. If you really want to differentiate from that sort of whatever, Folgers in a can or something that comes out of a box in a little bag that's not particularly good, we're talking about a world-class beverage here that needs to be treated as such.
Absolutely. And you know, hopefully we, you know, first and foremost, hopefully we treat it the way it's supposed to, and we, you know, we serve it correctly. I mean, there's a lot of training and, you know, thought that goes into, you know, all those different processes. But, you know, like you mentioned, you know, just a moment ago, I mean, you know, we do have a significant local following that, you know, we'll see them around the hall, you know, certain, you know, families, you know, there'll be two or three generations, you know, of one family that are at Holiday Tea together. You know, and it's important to us to keep that, you know, keep that local base happy, whether it's, you know, coming to Polo for drinks, coming into the grill room with our, you know, with our plate lunch that's been a huge success, you know, mostly due to, you know, to our local clientele. And, you know, whether or not it's the addition of, you know, the coffee and the, you know, the tea program in Café Anglais, you know, we're very lucky to have, I think we're a very well-supported hotel by, you know, folks that call New Orleans home or, you know, are in New Orleans, you know, several times a month or several times a year. And, you know, I think we just, you know, we constantly reevaluate our offerings and make sure we're staying relevant, we're staying, you know, trendy, and we're staying, you know, sort of ahead of the curve in certain aspects. But we also want to make sure that at the end of the day, what we're offering is what our guests want.
Yeah. Well, do me a favor, Joey, because and this is all really good stuff. The gals in my wife's family pretty much every single year go have tea there during the holidays, like you said. But because, you know, I know that you know this. I know you're on the show often with Tim on his show on the Dine, Wine, and Spirit show. This is the Noah Drink show, which is my show, as you know. And I think a lot of people are probably hearing it on the or will hear it on the podcast that maybe don't hear stuff. So if I can get you to stick around, man, after the break, let's come back. I want to talk a little bit more. Cool. I'd like to talk a little bit more about the hotel, talk a little bit more about the beverage program and kind of the breadth of what that is and where people can find you. How's that sound?
Yeah, that sounds great.
Awesome. Thank you. Folks, we're talking to Joey Worley there at the Windsor Court Hotel. Fantastic beverage program and a very famous historic place here in New Orleans. We're going to take a little bottom of the hour break on the show. We're going to come on back. We're going to talk to Joey a little bit more. Come on back.
Jigger of gin. Oh, what a spell you've got me in. Oh, my. Do I feel high?
The French Market is a place where history is made fresh daily. From the historic Upper Pentalba building on Jackson Square to the ever-evolving Farmers Market, our six-block district celebrates New Orleans food, music, and culture through events, festivals, walking tours, health and fitness classes, and also children's workshops at the New Orleans Jazz Park. Visit our calendar of events at www.frenchmarket.org. The French Market. Making history fun since 1791.
Are you looking for the best buns? Well, we have them at Bayou Burger in the Quarter. Wait till you bite into one of our acclaimed burgers like the Cowboy Burger, Tiebreaker Shrimp Burger, the world-famous Gator Burger, or you can build your own with endless combinations. It's all fresh meat, never ever frozen. Everywhere you look, there's big screen TVs where you'll never miss a minute of the action. Boasting the largest balcony dining in the French Quarter, you can watch all the action pass you by on the street. Find the best burgers in action at Bayou Burger. 501 Bourbon at St. Louis for the best buns on bourbon. It's Bayou Burger, baby.
Are you looking for a great place to enjoy great handcrafted and vintage cocktails? Victory is located at 339 Barone Street in the heart of downtown New Orleans. We have a variety of spirits, a talented team of bartenders, and great gourmet small plates. Our mission? To preserve an era when cocktails were made with artistry and pride. Grab your friends and come enjoy the ultimate cocktail experience. Give us a call to book your next private event or go to our website, victorynola.com. See you soon. Cheers.
Did you know that there's a vineyard and winery making quality table wines just 1 hour north of New Orleans? At Pontchartrain Vineyards, we produce award-winning wines from our 15-acre vineyard, as well as premium wine grapes sourced from the West Coast. Try our light, crisp, Louisiana-grown Blanc du Bois, or have a glass of Chardonnay, Zinfandel, or our Cab Syrah blend made right here in Louisiana. There's something for everyone at Pontchartrain Vineyards. For more information, go to PontchartrainVineyards.com.
Hi, this is Kevin Richards with Sazerac Rye Whiskey. It's football and festival season, and there's no better way to enjoy Sazerac Rye than in a pothole cocktail. Just fill up a glass with ice and your favorite root beer, and add 2 ounces of Sazerac Rye for a truly tasty toddy. Named after the city's most iconic of inconveniences, the pothole is proof that New Orleans never takes itself too seriously. Sazerac Rye Whiskey, the way New Orleans does whiskey.
This is Christopher Icaza, general manager of Broussard's Restaurant, 819 Conti Street in the beautiful Vaucaray. We encourage you to come join us this fall and experience the renovation of one of the French Quarter's grand dames. Join us in our beautifully renovated Napoleon dining room. Come see our friend Paul Gustings at the beautiful Empire Bar. Experience one of the French Quarter's loveliest courtyards. That's Broussard's Restaurant, 819 Conti Street. Open 7 nights a week and every Sunday for brunch.
Hello, this is Ron Bartholomew, and to my great city of New Orleans, I'd like to introduce to you Touch Vodka. This artisan handcrafted ultra-premium vodka is uniquely distilled from Florida's finest wildflower honey and American grain. Touch also produces key lime, Valencia orange, and ruby red grapefruit selections that are infused with natural oils of locally sourced fruit, which results in a unique 80-proof vodka with no sugar added or coloring. Touch is now available at Doranax, Cello's, and the Corporation Grill and Bar, and many other locations across Louisiana. This holiday season, sit back and relax and enjoy Touch Vodka.
Hey, New Orleans, Jack Jelenko here, local wine guy. Want a great alternative to Over Oak Chardonnay? Try Yamhill Valley Vineyards Pinot Blanc, a wonderfully balanced white wine from the oldest family estate in McMinnville, Oregon, in the Willamette Valley. It's round and ripe like a Chardonnay, but without the heavy oak and sweetness of big commercial corporate Chardonnays. Yamhill Valley Vineyard Pinot Blanc, a great value under $20. Ask for it wherever you buy wine. Cheers.
All right, everybody. Welcome back to the Noel Drink Show here on WGSO 990 AM New Orleans. Brian Diaz here with you. Thanks for joining me today on a Thursday. Happy Thursday, everybody. And we are chatting with Joey Worley, who is the food and beverage director there at the Windsor Court Hotel. Joey, thanks for sticking around, man. I appreciate it.
Of course. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. I think this is the first time that you've actually been on my show with me. So that's why, you know, I kind of want to reboot and talk about some of this stuff, man.
No, I appreciate the opportunity. And I think once maybe you subbed in for Tim and, we'd connected before, but not, I don't think, officially on your show. So this is great. It's nice to be with you.
Yeah, thanks, man. Yeah, for sure. I know we've when I sit in for Tim, which I still do when he's out of town, is we do that. And we've talked once or twice, three times maybe. But yeah, this is, I'm not going to say it's a whole new ball game because it's not, but it's, you know, it's right. Kind of a different ball game. So thanks for being there, man, and being here. So we talked a little bit about the coffee and the tea program, but I do want people to know, because I think it's a lot of new listeners out there that probably haven't heard before. You guys have a really fine beverage program. So the wine list is great. You've got a couple bars going on there that I want to talk about. And then, of course, we're going to, before we close out here the segment in a few minutes, tell people where you are. So let's start with the two bars that you have going on.
Sure thing. So we operate two bars, one in the lobby level of the hotel, and then the other is on the second floor of the hotel, sort of adjacent to the grill room. On the lobby level is a cocktail bar. Cocktail bar is our craft cocktail bar that is really sort of the brainchild of a gentleman by the name of Kent Westmoreland.
Mm-hmm.
Hopefully some of your listeners are familiar with Kent. He's a great guy. He was actually voted last year's Mixologist of the Year by New Orleans Magazine. He is very, very well respected in the bar and mixology world. And, you know, he's just an all-around great guy. He takes a lot of pride in what he does. He does, you know, some really fun, throughout the year, you know, seasonal cocktails, theme cocktails. He did sort of a fun, you know, around the holidays and sort of fourth quarter last year, he had a list of drinks that were inspired by the 70s, basically 1970s themed cocktails. My favorite was probably the one that was titled "Leave the Gun, Take the Cannolis" from The Godfather.
Right.
You know, another one was "Follow the Money" from All the President's Men. So, you know, Kent's got he can make a great drink, but he also he understands sort of some of the, I guess, the literary humor in some of these things, and you know, it's a lot of fun to come in and try and to pick his brain. I mean, we all for mixology classes here that are taught by him, and you know, he's just got a tremendous amount of knowledge. You know, knows how to mix a great drink, whether it's it's something as simple as a martini. You know, if you drink a martini and that's your thing, go see him. He'll make you a great one. If you want to come and try one of his creations and learn sort of the context and the history and why it is the way it is, then it's a great option also.
You know, Joey, here's what I like to say about Kent. We were talking at the top of the show because this weekend is the Danny Barker, the great New Orleans musician, his festival that is now the third right. annual festival. And, you know, we here in New Orleans refer to Danny Barker as the raconteur of New Orleans music. Kent is sort of the raconteur of the bar culture with maybe one or two or three other people here in town that you get a drink
absolutely.
And you get a story, man.
Yes, definitely do.
and even if you don't want the story, you get a story. But
right,
you should
right.
want the story.
There's no charge for the story. That's on us.
Yeah, so that's really cool. So that's what Kent does downstairs, and then we move upstairs, right?
Correct. You head upstairs into the Polo Club Lounge, which is you know, as the name you know, leads you to believe, you know, very much in that, you know, we're an English-themed hotel, being the Windsor Court, so we kind of take that, you know, take that theme a couple steps further, and, you know, we've themed the bar and the lounge area around, you know, around the game of polo. So, you know, the decor is pretty interesting. There's, you know, pictures, you know, riding crops and bridles and things like that, you know, kind of a you know, sort of very comfortable, you know, clubby atmosphere. And then really the, you know, the beverage selection there, I mean, we've, you know, we've got some phenomenal wines by the glass that we're constantly, you know, changing out to, you know, either, you know, match customer preferences or, you know, maybe seasonal specials or, you know, different things that we do there. We've got, you know, a really, I think, an equally as great, you know, cocktail program in Polo as we do, you know, not to compete with, you know, with Kent and what he's doing, but, you know, we've got a little bit larger staff in Polo, and they all kind of take their turns coming up with like a signature drink or two or three, and, you know, so that's a lot of fun to kind of, you know, try something different in that regard. Really, I think what we're known for in Polo, though, is the selection of bourbon, scotch, you know, sherry, Madeira, things like that. I mean, that are just, you know, we've got, you know, some just phenomenal, you know, brands in there, and, you know, it's interesting. You know, we were running, you know, for example, a flight of Woodford Reserve, you know, which mm-hmm. is one of my, you know, really mm-hmm. one of my all-time favorite bourbons, but you can get, you know, sort of their traditional reserve. There's a rye, and then there's a double oaked that you can, you know, you can get, you know, a flight of three. You can, you know, compare, contrast, see which one you like. And, you know, I think that's always fun. You know, when you can include the, you know, a little bit of an educational component, some people could care less. I just want my drink and, you know, leave me alone. Let me read the paper, hang out. You know, other people are into that.
You know, and
I think that's always fun to offer.
Absolutely, Joey. And, you know, one thing, I know you know this as a beverage professional, one of the things I like to talk about, just, you know, when I teach wine classes and stuff like that, is we tend to think that beverages are sort of when we typically experience them, no fault with how this works, but it's sort of what I like to say is a monolithic experience, meaning we order a bottle of wine, we drink that wine, and the opportunity to do, say, like a flight of whiskeys where you can do a compare and contrast is really where you start to understand the differences in things. And I think that's a really important thing that people sometimes really don't get a chance to experience.
I think, you know, like, you know, folks like you and I mean, we're in this business, we're around it all the time, we're constantly reading and tasting and doing things like that. But I mean, I think for, you know, for folks that aren't exposed to it that often, that, you know, maybe it's a, you know, as weird as this sounds, sometimes for you and I, tasting bourbon is like, oh man, do I have to do this again? You know, it might be a real treat for somebody that, you know, they, you know, do a different type of work, and, you know, maybe this is, you know, to come and chat with, you know, with Kent or with Roger, one of our Polo bartenders, with Bill, our sommelier, you know, to chat with them about the ins and outs of a type of wine or, you know, a spirit or something like that. I mean, it can be really fun, and it can, you know, I mean, we're all about building, you know, really great and interesting and memorable experiences here, and, you know, they can easily, you know, a night out can easily turn into something like that when you have that that sort of curiosity component there to, you know, to factor in.
That's really well said, and I think that is, in what you said, something I think is a critical component in all this, is that experiential part, that educational part, is stuff that people are going to come away from actually remembering that experience. And I mean, you might get a great meal and all this kind of stuff, and I'm not knocking that, but when you kind of add that extra level of, let me tell you why this tastes like it does, or let me tell you why this beverage goes with the meal well, or let me tell you why this whiskey tastes differently from this whiskey.
Right.
That's the stuff that you walk away from knowing something, and you're not going to forget that.
You know, absolutely, and just, you know, those little nuanced things, like, this is, you know, like you say, you know, the reason why it tastes like that is because it was aged this way versus
right.
that way. You know, I mean, just those little things. I think anybody, you know, like, certainly for myself, I mean, when I was, you know, 15 or 17 years ago, whatever it was, when I first, you know, got into this business, it was little memories like that that made it interesting and made it fun for me, and it's, oh, this is something I want to do, you know, long term. I mean, it just sort of, you know, and incurring that knowledge and then being able to pass it on to other people and kind of brighten their day with it or you know, make them, you know, more interested in what we're doing. I mean, that's, you know, to me, that's the, most of the fun of our business and what we do.
Yeah, being more empowered when you go out next time and order something too,
exactly.
Right?
I mean, so many people are, you know, I'm intimidated by the wine list or I'm intimidated by the sommelier. You know, you shouldn't be. At the end of the day, first of all, it's not NASA. This isn't rocket science.
Right. Drink like, what you like, and you're not a rocket scientist. Yeah, right.
Yeah. It's real basic stuff.
Well, Joey, do me a favor, man, before we go here. Tell people, again, because a lot of new listeners out there, tell people where the Windsor Court Hotel is, both where the hotel is on the street and then where they can find you online.
Yeah, absolutely. So our website's you know, windsorcourthotel.com. You know, that's really the sort of the gateway to all sorts of different information about not only, you know, the food and beverage offerings, you know, cocktail bar, polo lounge, the grill room, Cafe Anglais, all those things we've talked about today. But, you know, we do periodically throughout the year, you know, lots of different fun, you know, rooms packages. You know, we've got some great deals out there. Right now there's a bed and breakfast offering. You know, during the summertime we do a really, you know, great, couple great deals that are popular a lot of times with our local guests. So, you know, certainly, you know, visit that website. It's kind of the, you know, the clearinghouse for all things Windsor Court. And then physically, our address is technically, we're 300 Gravier Street, but we actually occupy, you know, almost half of a city block. We're smack in between the Lay Meridian and the Doubletree, right across from Harris Casino on South Peters. And we've got a large parking garage, and we validate parking. You get a discounted parking rate of $8 for up to 4 hours if you have lunch or dinner, or, you know, come for drinks or tea or anything like that. So. You know, yeah. Hope folks come out and see us. You know, like you said, the new year, start the carnival season, and, you know, we got a lot of fun things going on here. So,
yeah, Joey, here we go, man.
Yeah,
or would, yeah, we always say that, right? Here we go. But hey, Joey, thanks so much for being on the show. I really appreciate it, man.
All and right, Brian, thanks
yeah,
for having me.
Yeah, I got to come see you soon. It's been a little while,
yeah,
so I'll come check you out, man.
Yeah, get over here sometime. Check us out.
Yeah, absolutely. Folks, Joey Worley, food and beverage director from the Windsor Court Hotel. And hey, we're going to take a little break here on the NOLA Drink Show. Come on back.
Hey ladies, are you looking for wine to bring to your next girls' night out? Grab a bottle of Capitello wines and enjoy the taste of fruit from Oregon's Willamette Valley. Capitello has a wide variety of wines to choose from. Sauvignon Blanc, Pinot Noir, dessert wine, and a Brut Sparkling that's a blend of Pinot Noir and Chardonnay. He'll even stop by next time he's in town. So grab the girls, have fun, and enjoy Capitello wine. Cheers.
Hi, this is Jeff Craner with the award-winning Nottingham Cellars, located in Livermore Valley, California's oldest wine-growing region. Producers of fine wines. Try our clean, crisp 1846 Chardonnay, an ideal pairing with New Orleans seafood. Or our bold, rich Petit Sirah, excellent with steak. To our flagship Bordeaux-style blend, Supremacy. You can find our wines in finer restaurants throughout New Orleans. Hope you enjoy our wines.
Hi, I'm Dickie Brennan, and I'd like to invite you to our new Black Duck Bar, located on the second floor of Palace Cafe. Rum is the chosen spirit of Palace Cafe's Black Duck Bar and features an extensive rum collection from all over the world. Be sure to join us for happy hour Monday through Friday, 4 to 6 p.m., with half-price small plates, local draft beer, and tap wine. Look forward to seeing you soon at Palace Cafe's new Black Duck Bar.
All right, everybody. Welcome back to the NOLA Drink Show. Brian Diaz here with you. Happy to be here with you. Happy Thursday. Yeah, just a little touch of the meters there for you. It's carnival season. Here we go. Hey, and talking about here we go, we're talking to Jose De La Rosa over there at Bin 428 Wine Shop. Jose, how are you, man?
I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm doing good, man. Thanks for taking a little time out today to chat with us.
Yeah, anytime.
Yeah, man. So you guys got your Bin 428 there on Magazine Street and fine little bottle shop, wine shop. And, you know, I always want to correct myself when I talk to y'all. I talk to Candace, you know, there runs the shop, is that it's not a wine shop. you guys got a lot of wine, but you guys got good spirits. You got some other stuff going on there too, man.
Everything.
Yeah.
A little bit of everything.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And, you know, and you got like a fine spirits selection. One of the things I really like about the shop too, Jose, there is that y'all have, you know, it's not a huge store, right? We're not talking about like big grocery store or warehouse store. It's just a fine selection of really nice stuff. And you guys do a good job presenting what it is that you have.
Yeah, we try to be small, curated. You know, you can't have everything, so we try to be nice and focused and pinpoint on, you know, what we like and what people want and things like that.
Yeah, and you guys do a really good job of that.
Thank you.
Yeah, absolutely, you're welcome. And one of the things that you guys also do, which is a lot of fun, is you guys do really interesting wine tastings, I think, and bring in some interesting stuff. And I've actually been to a whole bunch of your different tastings, both, you know, wine, spirits, and beer. And in this case, you have a really cool wine tasting going on. And just so you know, Jose, normally on the show, I don't necessarily talk about a ton of stuff like this, but I think Bedrock Wine Company, who you guys have going on out of Sonoma, is an interesting company.
They really are. They're unabashedly American California producers that we don't get in here very often. And, you know, they make some wine that really is kind of the roots of American winemaking, is what they're focused on.
Can you elaborate on that a little bit, Jose? What do you mean by that?
I mean, a lot of what they do are field blends. So a long time ago within California wine, the way it started was, instead of doing these small, single varietal batches that you then blend to make a red blend, for instance, you would have a field that was planted with Zinfandel and Carignan and Mourvedre and Tempranillo and whatever a lot of the settlers brought with them, and then you would just make a wine out of that.
Yeah, and that's a great point, because I think a lot of people don't know, and I mean, that's also obviously went on in the old world to a large degree, but that's, not to use a pun here, I'll do it. It's almost been rooted out, in a sense, in that,
definitely.
You know, people have gone to, like, these are the vines, this is even the clone of the varietal that we're talking about, and we know where they are, but using field blends, which is pretty typical in the kind of older approach in Sonoma, is actually one of the places that holds on to that, where we have different varietals in the same block of vineyard going together, and then the stuff ends up being fermented together, barreled together, all that stuff.
Yeah, you get really unique flavor profiles, and there's and it's just fun.
Yeah,
it's not as caught up with, you know, the big craze of everyone ripping up these vines and laying Pinot Noir, or Cabernet is the most profitable, so you got to grow Cabernet here if you're going to make money. It's a different vineyard focused kind of class of winemaking that it's welcome that's coming back.
Yeah, I think it's really neat, and like you're talking about, where, you know, we kind of start to, and I mean, and there's a value to this, a lot of this works, but it's, you know, I have planted this specific clone, and we've talked a lot about in this show what that means, but within, say, a varietal Cabernet Sauvignon or something, we have a clone, which is another little variation within. So you're saying, I have selected clone number blah 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 because I put it in here, and the whole vineyard is this. And in this case, again, what we're talking about is it's a little bit more of an open-ended approach of having different varietals, and the vines are going to perform differently. The different varietals in that block of vineyard are going to perform differently each year. So you're going to end up with a little bit, it's going to, you know, like wine is always different, but in this case, there's even going to be that much more variation every vintage.
Oh yeah. The variation's there, and you're going to also have things that will happen in a vineyard in this case, when like genetically all the population's so varied, you're going to get depths and flavors that you just do not get and very homogenous vineyard sites.
Exactly.
This is exciting.
That is exciting, and that's really well put and explained. And, you know, one of the things that I want to talk about with these guys too, Jose, with Bedrock, is, you know, we know here in New Orleans and really elsewhere, it's not unique to here, but rosé is a wine, especially, and I will highlight here, rosé is a wine that we can drink year-round in New Orleans because it goes great with the food. It goes, you know, hell, it's January and it's 73 degrees and humid outside.
Yeah, it's kind of crazy.
right, exactly. So, you know, we can sit on the stoop here and actually drink rosé. And I like what their approach is with the rosé, which I think a lot of people, want to get into this a little bit, people don't know what that means. And go ahead and tell us about rosé.
They do their rosé, unlike doing a Saignée method where you bleed off, you make a red wine, you're going to make it, everything's macerating, and very
early part of maceration, you bleed off some to increase concentration in your red, and you use that extra that was lighter in color that's bled off to make wine.
Right. So let me explain that real quick. So Jose, real fast, so people know, is that when we first bring red grapes in, okay, what gives red wine the color and what gives rosé, traditional rosé, the color? It's all coming from the skin. And so what then happens is that we bring in stuff and it's crushed a little bit, or when it's picked, juice is running off and it's not seeing a lot of time, as you said, macerating with the skins. So that's just kind of this free run juice that comes off and it's lighter in color, and they siphon a little bit of that off and make rosé, and then they take the rest of everything else and make the red wine. And that's the Saunier method.
Yeah, and in the case of Bedrock, they are picking grapes to make rosé, where it's a very focused, they're taking their time, and everything that goes in that tank that is designated for rosé ends up as rosé.
Yeah, we want that acid level, right? We don't necessarily want to make it the red wine. We want to kind of balance that. And so what you're saying, I think, is that, you know, we're talking about in the vineyard, we are actually cultivating the grapes and growing them as such and picking them as such to make a rosé, not just as a byproduct of red wine.
Exactly. You're not doing it to, like, you know, sometimes make up your bottom line while your red wine's aging. You have something to go out to the market now.
Right.
They're making something right here and there. They're picking the grapes by hand based on what that wine's going to be in the end, whether it's a rosé, a white, a red. And it's just that careful attention to detail that makes their wine so good. It's just, as I said, that they're in the vineyards all the time checking grapes for ripeness, which means a lot of times they're picking what earlier than most California producers, mm-hmm. to make ensure they get enough balance, especially with acidity, to build that overall balance for their wine.
That's what we need. Well, do me a favor, Jose. We got about a minute and a half left. Tell people where the wine shop is. The tasting is tonight from 6 to 8 p.m. with Bedrock Wines. I'm sure they're going to have the rosé on hand. Where are y'all located?
We're on 2801 Magazine Street, right on the corner of Washington and Magazine.
Awesome. And where can people find you online, Jose?
At ben428.com and at Facebook at Ben428.
Ben428. Awesome. Jose, thanks so much, man, and good luck with the tasting this evening. I appreciate it. I'm hoping I'm going to pass by, man, so I know you're going to be there. I'm going to try to come check you out because I want to go to, I like these wines, so I want to come taste them. That's how it works. Jose, thanks for being here, man. I really appreciate it.
Thank you. Have a great day.
Absolutely. You too. Folks, coming back hour number two of the Dine, Wine, and Spirit Show, the NOLA Drinks edition of the show. We're going to be back with Gino Colangelo from Colangelo PR. Talk about drink trends coming up here in 2017. It's going to be a fascinating conversation. Friends, come on back.
Shake things up or find the bartender in you? We mean literally. At the New Orleans Drink Lab, you'll do just that. We teach you the history and tradition of classic New Orleans cocktails. Then you get behind the bar and make them. Master classes are fun, interactive, and hands-on. Great for small groups and team building. Come enjoy the ultimate cocktail experience. You mix, muddle, and master the art of cocktail making. Visit us at 343 Barone Street. Or go to our website, drinklabnola.com.
Hi, this is Jeff Craner with the award-winning Nottingham Cellars, located in Livermore Valley, California's oldest wine-growing region, producers of fine wines. Try our clean, crisp 1846 Chardonnay, an ideal pairing with New Orleans seafood, or our bold, rich Petite Sirah, excellent with steak, to our flagship Bordeaux-style blend, Supremacy. You can find our wines in finer restaurants throughout New Orleans. Hope you enjoy our wines.
With the season's beautiful weather, it's a perfect time to take a drive across Lake Pontchartrain and visit New Orleans' only local vineyard and winery, Pontchartrain Vineyards. Our tasting room is open Wednesday through Sunday from noon till 4, or by appointment. Come enjoy a flight of our wines in our classically styled French Provençal tasting room, or pack a picnic lunch and enjoy a bottle of wine on our patio overlooking the vineyard. While you're there, ask about our wine club. For more information, go to PontchartrainVineyards.com.
Hi, Jack Jelenko here, local wine guy, suggesting that great handcrafted Pinot Noir from Oregon doesn't need to be expensive. Consider Yamhill Valley Vineyard Estate Pinot Noir from the oldest family estate in the Willamette Valley of Oregon. It's rich, ripe, wonderfully balanced, and it's only about $20 at your favorite New Orleans wine shop. Yamhill Valley Vineyard. Top quality doesn't need to be expensive if you know what to drink. Ask for it wherever you buy wine. Cheers.
Tim McNally, welcome to the Dine, Wine, and Spirit Show, NOLA Drinks Edition. Here's your host, Brian Diaz.
All right, everybody, welcome back to hour number two of the NOLA Drinks Show here on WGSO 990 AM New Orleans and the NOLA Drinks Podcast everywhere else, so you can find that in the interweb. Thanks for tuning in today. I appreciate it. Happy to be joined by Gino Colangelo there from Colangelo PR up in New York. Gino, are you with me?
Yes, I'm here.
Hey, man, how are you?
I'm doing good. We got a nice warm day in New York after a little bit of a freezing spell.
Yeah, you know what? I think we've kind of mirrored you, Gino, here. We're down to, mid-20s, upper 20s here in New Orleans over the weekend, and now we're up to a slimy, humid, balmy 73 or so today.
Mid-20s New Orleans, it's hard to picture.
It does happen every once in a while, and then you give that about 2 days and it goes away, and here we are back to our subtropical weather. So, Gino, I was mentioning here at the top of the show before you came on, you run a PR firm, and I was mentioning, we do a show about drinking food, as you know, here in New Orleans and elsewhere we talk about, and how is that important? And what you all do is that you guys help bring brands to the market. You guys help promote brands in the market. And one of the things that we're going to talk about the next half an hour or so is stuff that you're seeing going on in the beverage industry, because you have your finger on that pulse.
Yep. Yeah, our whole business is premium wine and spirits. That's the world we live in. We're very uniquely positioned, really, within the trade, and we're industry players. And of course, we communicate out to consumers, but we begin within the trade. We talk to the sommeliers for our wine clients. We talk to bartenders for our spirits clients. We know the importers and distributors. So. The guys who run the restaurants, the people who run the retail stores. So, yeah, wine spirits at the premium end, that's our business.
Right. And so now when you guys do this, is the emphasis on stuff that is coming into the country from foreign producers typically?
Probably about 85% okay. Imported, about 15% domestic. We are looking to build more domestic business. Interestingly, our reputation in Spain and Italy is much greater than it is in the U.S., but we're working on it.
So when you say that in Spain and Italy, as far as putting stuff into the market in those markets?
No, as far as bringing stuff in. The players knowing us, the wine companies knowing us.
Gotcha. Okay.
We work in the U.S. exclusively, so we are helping wine and spirits companies, largely imported companies, sell their products and build their brands in the U.S.
Right. Now, how do you guys go about, as a PR company, I'm sure, a lot of, this is a big market, a lot of people want to be in the U.S. market. How do you guys go about selecting things and find what fits in your portfolio, what works for you guys, and how do you guys go about that?
We typically work with entrepreneur-driven companies and a premium, super premium. So, most of our clients are the winemaker is putting his hand in his pocket and paying our bill. So you take the business really personally when you work that closely with the principals and the entrepreneurs. That's most of our business. We typically work with family companies, but we also work with institutional marketers. By that I mean wines from Spain, wines of Greece, wines of South Africa. So groups that gather together and then market a particular type of wine or spirit. So that's really how our business breaks down. And we don't work with the big, you know, spirits companies and wine companies, the Constellations and Diageos. Not that there's anything wrong with that, but our niche is more the entrepreneur-driven companies and then the institutional marketers.
Right, and those guys, like you mentioned, the big guys, they've got their in-house mechanisms to do this stuff.
They also hire agencies, but, okay. You know, everybody has their niche, and ours happens to be the more entrepreneurial-driven brands.
Gotcha.
And, you know, real, like, winemakers who are selling their own wine. You know, the distiller who's out there marketing his own product.
So folks that would not necessarily then have the wherewithal to get into some of these markets because they're a small family-run operation or that sort of thing.
Yeah,
is that a fair way to put it?
Small, like the Frescobaldi family is a big wine company, but it's not Constellation by any measure, and we can become true partners to them. We can be eyes and ears in the market for them. We can be consult for, you know, market trends. We can make introductions to potentially key accounts in addition to our bread and butter, which is keeping those clients' products in the press.
Okay. Well, let's talk a little bit about that, Gino, since you brought it up, is what, you know, as we move here into 2017 and some of the shows that we did here closing out 2016, we talked a little bit about some of the trends in the beverage industry. What are you seeing that's coming up? What to look for this year?
Well, I mean, I think we're fortunate, and I would like to think we have a little part in it, but Spanish wines are trending. The values are fantastic. The food friendliness is unbelievable. The diversity is great. You have a lot of indigenous varieties, and you have a lot of young winemakers really going back to the land and making wines that are not overly sort of processed, a little bit more natural. Focusing on the indigenous grape varieties. So Spanish wines are doing great.
And Gino, before you move on from there, can you elaborate on that a little bit for listeners out here? So, because I think, you know, Spanish wines, there are some varietals that we know that are some of the big indigenous players, and then a lot of stuff that are, you know, non-Spanish varietals being grown there. And can you elaborate a little bit on rediscovering some of those indigenous varietals and what that actually means, what they are?
Sure. Well, you know, most people know Tempranillo, which is Rioja and Ribera del Duro, but there's a lot of other great wine coming out of Spain. You know, there's beautiful white wines. Godello is, you know, from the northern coast. Albariño, Rueda, and then there's smaller regions that you know, that are making wonderful wines that. You know, in the Douro River Valley, in the north, you know, east corner up near San Sebastian in the Pyrenees. Just a beautiful diversity of wines and, you know, rich, hearty wines, great food wines. I would encourage anybody to explore Spanish wines. I would challenge anybody to find a Spanish wine that doesn't exceed its value in terms, you know, would over deliver against its cost.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and you were saying, I'm sorry, before I cut you off there, you were mentioning moving to Greek wines and another place. I think that's quite similar with that, right? We're starting to get back in, or I shouldn't say get back into, but in this part of the world, discover Greek varietals, which are quite different than a lot of stuff that we're used to.
Yeah, I mean, if you think about it, a lot of the wine culture in Europe emanated out of Greece. You know, in southern Italy, there's a lot of Greek varietals. The wines of Santorini are really special and the favorite of Psalms. It's, you know, if you talk about white wines, international white wines, I think Santorini will be right up there amongst the most popular among the sommelier community. Again, you know, the challenge for Greece is, you know, tough to pronounce variety, you know,
right.
You can imagine. And
let alone spell, right?
That's a challenge for our company, too. And please don't ask me to pronounce, you know, Agirtico or Moscow Filero, or but you know,
Gino, I wasn't going to even go there at all. We're just going to call them Greek varietals, man. So yeah.
But there again, I mean, if you go into a wine store or you look at a menu, a wine list in a restaurant, and you look for Greek wine, same as with Spain, you will get a wine that is going to be very characteristic of its territory. Going to ask the Somme for a little help in terms of the food pairing, but really going to kill it on value. Going to be something unique that maybe you haven't tasted before. Something that you could really kind of adopt as your own. Something you could tell your friends about and be excited about.
Absolutely. And as you said a couple of times, a great value, which I think is really important here as well. Gino, do me a favor, stick around. We're going to take a quick little break. We're going to come back. Sure. And let's talk a little bit about spirits when we come back. How does that sound?
Sure, absolutely.
Friends, coming back to the NOLA Drink Show here on WGSO 990 AM New Orleans. A little bit of Fats Domino for you. Come on back.
I say a little prayer and drink up and praise the Lord.
The Black Duck Bar is now open on the second floor of Dickie Brennan's Palace Cafe. Named in honor of the famous Black Duck Rum Runner, the bar features an extensive rum collection. Also noted for its small plates and charcuterie, the Black Duck Bar is sure to please. Join us for happy hour 4 to 6 p.m. Monday through Friday and try half-price draft beer, wine on tap, or a small plate. Stop by Palace Cafe at 605 Canal Street and try a delicious rum cocktail at the new Black Duck Bar.
Looking for a bottle of wine to impress your friends and family? Miro Cellars from California's Russian River Valley is the perfect wine for any occasion. Miro Cellars searches the region for the finest grapes to make their one-of-a-kind specialty wines. Award-winning winemaker Miro Chelikov considers the particular geology and seasonal climate of each vineyard when selecting the most interesting grapes the region has to offer. Because Miro has complete freedom to make precisely the wines he loves best, the results are spectacular. Let yourself in on one of the best-kept secrets in wine today, Miro Cellars.
Are you looking for a great place to enjoy great handcrafted and vintage cocktails? Victory is located at 339 Barone Street in the heart of downtown New Orleans. We have a variety of spirits, a talented team of bartenders, and great gourmet small plates. Our mission? To preserve an era when cocktails were made with artistry and pride. Grab your friends and come enjoy the ultimate cocktail experience. Give us a call to book your next private event or go to our website, victorynola.com. See you soon. Cheers.
All right, everybody, welcome back to the NOLA Drink Show. Hey, a little bit of a Big Chief there by Professor Longhair. A little bit of the record drop, so you get a little bit of the actual wax going on, even though we don't have a turntable in the studio. We're chatting with Gino Colangelo from Colangelo & Partners PR up there in New York. Thanks for joining us, Gino, today. I appreciate it.
Oh, thank you for having me.
Absolutely. So, Gino, yeah, absolutely, man. So you and I actually met in person for the first time there at Tales of the Cocktail.
Yes.
In July. Are you going to be back this July?
I'm certainly planning. I love coming to Tales every year. I can't quite take as many days as I used to, but I pack plenty of activity into 2 or 3 days and look forward to it every year.
You know, somebody said this to me, Gino, yesterday, day before yesterday, we were talking about it where, you know, oh my God, it's already coming up already. You know, we got Mardi Gras, we got festival season, and it's like we're already, you know, Tales is only 6 months away, and we're still not right from Tales 6 months ago.
But well, that's why you're lucky to live in New Orleans.
I guess.
All credit to Ann Tunerman. She's really created an institution at Tales. Great for New Orleans, great for the spirits community.
Yeah, hey, it gives us something to do in July. Not like we were lacking, but, you know, there you go.
Other than sweat.
Yeah, other than sweat. Yeah, you get to sit inside and drink cocktails. It's perfect. But, yeah. Well, Gino, so we were talking a little bit before the break about some of the trends that you're seeing in the wine business, and you guys also do a lot of craft spirit stuff and spirit stuff. What are we seeing there, man?
I think that Japanese spirits are coming up. So shochu, for example.
Yeah. Okay.
Fantastic mixable spirit. It's a little lower in alcohol, a little lower in calories. And I think it's very mixable, and I think that, you know, bartenders are starting to experiment with it more. It's kind of moving from that Japanese restaurant, Japanese kind of bar, kind of, you know, community out into a bigger mainstream audience. And I think shochu is really poised for a big, you know, to make a big mark in the mixology community.
Well, Gino, let me ask you about this because I'm a big fan of shochu, by the way, and I grew up in California, so I was exposed to it a number of years ago. And I mean, really a couple of things. We're really just starting to see it come on to the market here and the selection as far as there's really only one place. There's an international market called Hong Kong Market over here on the West Bank that stocks a good amount of shochu. Otherwise, it's very difficult to find anywhere. And just so listeners know out there, you may be familiar with sake, which is a fermented rice wine. This is a distillate.
Familiar. Yep. Of course.
Yeah, of course. And then this is a distillate that we're talking about. It's a rice and sometimes sweet potato distillate. And the question that I have for you then is because we're in a city where I grew up by San Francisco, we had a big Japanese population. So that was a natural entree for shochu and sake. Obviously the same for you all in New York. Here we don't have that huge core Japanese culture. So is it that bartender culture that's starting to bring it into places where you don't have, like we did in San Francisco, Japantown?
Yeah, I think, frankly, it is starting, California, New York, like a lot of trends do, because of the media concentration, because of the bartender concentration. Not that New Orleans lacks for great bartenders. It's a great cocktail town. But I think you'll start to see it sort of move to the center again, as trends do.
Availability, like you're saying, right? I mean, this is what we're talking about.
It's a chicken and an egg, right? The more product will come available as people ask for it. I think that there's a lot of education needed. Shochu is Japanese, soju is Korean. Mm-hmm. Shochu is, frankly, more of that premium spirit, more of the mixable spirit. But like anything else, it just requires a lot of education, a lot of marketing, a lot of investment, and that's what we encourage our clients to do, is to look at the market in a long term, and if you're not prepared to be here for the long term and invest, probably best not to come at all.
That makes a lot of sense. And I want to mention this just because it's sort of near and dear to my heart. I lived in Korea for a year about 20 years ago. And unfortunately, soju, which you mentioned, is somewhat similar in a lot of ways, often made from sweet potato more commonly. You don't get the good stuff on the market. Yeah, it's just not imported into the country at all.
And a huge volume product. I mean, some of the biggest selling spirits in the world are soju's and shochu's.
Yep.
It's just not here yet, but I think it's coming on the shochu side. The Japanese, everything they make well. Whether it's whiskey, whether it's TVs, whether it's cars, or whether it's shochu, so you could always count on Japanese craftsmanship. And they're meticulous, and they do their homework, and they do tend to invest for the long term. So I'm optimistic about that. Japanese whiskeys are doing phenomenal.
Absolutely.
Some of the best whiskeys in the world. Mezcal, another hot trend, and people loving the smokiness and the earthiness. And, tequila lovers, it's a little bit of a step to mezcal, right?
Yep.
I think that's another trending product.
We're starting to see that, Gino, happen here in New Orleans, and I've done a couple shows on mezcal recently with some folks that are vested in that, both on the actual spirit itself as well as the social component behind it, and it's a very interesting story. And exactly as you said, you start with tequila, and then maybe you move into the mezcal. What are your thoughts on Pisco? Just because it reminds me of Pisco.
Pisco is interesting. I think that. I think it's a tougher sell, frankly. I think that it's gained some market share, but it's sort of lost a little energy in the last 2 to 3 years from what I can gather.
Mm-hmm.
I know there's pockets of success for Pisco. I think that, like shochu, for example, by comparison, not that they're similar products, but shochu is much more mixable. So for the bartender community, I think you can do a lot more with it. Mm-hmm. I think it has its place. I just think that, it's such a competitive market and not everything can trend at once. And I think, Pisco probably, let's say 2-3 years ago, was maybe trending a little bit more, at least within the trade audiences.
Okay, that's interesting because I think we see it on a retail and some of the bar level here in New Orleans kind of trending now, which is
funny because the way I look at trends is probably 2 years before they're more retail and restaurant driven because I'm looking at them as they're selling in and as the distributors are carrying more and as more marketing effort is being put behind them. So
that's why you're in business, man, right? At least I hope so. Yeah, and that makes a lot of sense. Well, Gino, you got one more. We got a couple minutes left here. You got one more trend or something you want to give us in the spirits business?
You know, I think American whiskeys are trending well. I think Amaros from Italy are trending, and people are finding them mixable. I think Fernet Branca has done a great job, and then there's some terrific up-and-coming ones like Amaro Lucano.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, it's the bigger story is craft, right, that people want a product of place. You know, aviation gin coming out of Portland, made by a bartender, you know, just owning Portland. I mean, that's what is becoming cool. That's what people want. So I think that that is a great trend for the consumer, where you get passionate people making great product that are very distinctive, and we have choice. We are not limited to 3 gins and 5 vodkas and 6 whiskeys. You know, we have lots of, in fact, so many choices you can get dizzy sometimes. But
right.
But it's fun experimenting.
Yeah, Gino, thank you. Really quickly, we got about 30 seconds. Where can people find you online? Because I know you guys have some information online on what's in your portfolio.
We are at Colangelo, that's colangelopr.com. ColangeloPR, as in publicrelations.com. And yeah, if it's about wine and spirits, then please reach out to us, because that's what we do and that's what we love.
Awesome. Gino, love to have you on in some future shows, because we could have unpacked any number of other things
There's no lack of stuff to talk about.
Absolutely. Well, so we'll have you on again soon, and we'll certainly see you in July during Tales, my friend. Thanks for being on the show. I appreciate it.
Thank you very much.
Absolutely, Gino.
Thanks,
take care.
Bye.
Friends, coming back here to the NOLA Drink Show on WGSO 990 AM New Orleans. Hey, we're going to close out the show with some stuff. Come on back.
I feel high over me. Oh, my. Do I feel high? Dry martini. Jigger of gin. What a spell you've got me in. Oh my, do I feel high.
Hi, this is Kevin Richards with New Orleans' own Sazerac Company, makers of Sazerac Rye Whiskey. In case you haven't noticed, rye whiskey is hot, flying off store shelves and dominating the bar scene in New Orleans and around the country. Rye's spicy and assertive character is drawing in those looking for whiskey with a bite, but that equally pairs well with cocktails. Enjoy it in cocktails like the Old Fashioned or Manhattan, or simply savor it on the rocks. Sazerac Rye Whiskey, the way New Orleans does whiskey.
This is Christopher Icaza, General Manager of Broussard's Restaurant, 819 Conti Street in the beautiful Vaucouleurs. We encourage you to come join us this fall and experience the renovation of one of the French Quarter's Grand Dames. Join us in our beautifully renovated Napoleon Dining Room. Come see our friend Paul Gustings at the beautiful Empire Bar. Experience one of the French Quarter's loveliest courtyards. That's Broussard's Restaurant, 819 Conti Street. Open 7 nights a week and every Sunday for brunch.
Hi, this is Jeff Craner with the award-winning Nottingham Cellars, located in Livermore Valley, California's oldest wine-growing region, producers of fine wines. Try our clean, crisp 1846 Chardonnay, an ideal pairing with New Orleans seafood, or our bold, rich Petit Sirah, excellent with steak, to our flagship Bordeaux-style blend, Supremacy. You can find our wines in finer restaurants throughout New Orleans. Hope you enjoy our wines.
Hey, New Orleans, Jack Jelenko here, local wine guy. If you're listening to this show, you love good food and good wine. And a great wine with our plentiful fresh Gulf seafood is the Domaine St. Rose Coquille Blanc, a crisp, balanced white blend from the south of France. Whether it's with fresh oysters, crab, redfish, or shrimp, this Domaine St. Rose Coquille Blanc will not disappoint. And it's a great value at around $14. Domaine St. Rose Coquille Blanc. Cheers!
The French Market is open daily with pop-up fresh markets on Wednesdays and Saturdays. The Crescent City Farmers Market is at the French Market each Wednesday, rain or shine, from 2 to 6 p.m. On Saturdays from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m., find new and different vendors offering everything from fresh bagels to fresh herbs. Vendors change weekly depending on weather and seasons, so check them out often. Visit frenchmarket.org for a list of farmers market vendors, chef demonstrations, live music, and special events.
Are you looking for the best buns? Well, we have them at Bayou Burger in the Quarter. Wait till you bite into one of our acclaimed burgers like the Cowboy Burger, Tiebreaker Shrimp Burger, the world-famous Gator Burger, or you can build your own with endless combinations. It's all fresh meat, never ever frozen. Everywhere you look, there's big screen TVs where you'll never miss a minute of the action. Boasting the largest balcony dining in the French Quarter, you can watch all the action pass you by on the street. Find the best burgers in action at Bayou Burger. 501 Bourbon at St. Louis for the best buns on bourbon. It's Bayou Burger, baby.
Did you know that there's a vineyard and winery making quality table wines just 1 hour north of New Orleans? At Pontchartrain Vineyards, we produce award-winning wines from our 15-acre vineyard, as well as premium wine grapes sourced from the West Coast. Try our light, crisp, Louisiana-grown Blanc du Bois, or have a glass of Chardonnay, Zinfandel, or our Cab Syrah blend made right here in Louisiana. There's something for everyone at Pontchartrain Vineyards. For more information, go to PontchartrainVineyards.com.
The Black Duck Bar is now open on the second floor of Dickie Brennan's Palace Cafe. Named in honor of the famous Black Duck Rum Runner, the bar features an extensive rum collection. Also noted for its small plates and charcuterie, the Black Duck Bar is sure to please. Join us for happy hour 4 to 6 p.m. Monday through Friday and try half-price draft beer, wine on tap, or a small plate. Stop by Palace Cafe at 605 Canal Street and try a delicious rum cocktail at the new Black Duck Bar.
All right, everybody, welcome back to the NOLA Drink Show here on WGSO 990 AM New Orleans. Brian Diaz here with you. Little Rebirth Brass Band. BJ is working the board as he does. We were talking a little bit about this during the break, is that the Red Hot Chili Peppers were here in town the night before last. I didn't get to go to the show. People don't invite me to things like that, and I'm kind of old, so it was a little late. But Rebirth turned up on the stage with them. So did George Porter Jr. There you go. And Trombone Shorty. And then BJ was just telling me, actually, where is that show, Tipitinas or Maple Leaf? Maple Leaf. And so Rebirth does their weekly gig pretty much there at Maple Leaf. And Flea, they're the bass player from the Red Hot Chili Peppers, turned up at that show. I missed it. Hopefully, if you're listening here in New Orleans and y'all got a chance to see it. And if you don't know who these, if you're listening out of town, you probably know who the Red Hot Chili Peppers are. If you don't know who Trombone Shorty is, if you don't know who George Porter Jr. is, if you don't know who Rebirth Brass Band is, we spin a lot of that music in and out of the breaks and stuff, but you should know that. So go check that out. Friends, one of the things that I wanted to talk about here on the show is a little bit about, I'm getting a lot of questions about this from friends around here talking about wine out in California and the deluge of precipitation that has gone on out there. And actually, if you were listening to Tim's show, or I was filling in for him yesterday while he was out of town, actually out in that part of the world, judging the San Francisco Chronicle wine competition, I talked a little bit about this, but you know, I want to cover it again here on the NOLA Drink Show and talk a little bit about that, because I am getting a lot of questions. Huge amounts of precipitation going on in California. This is a good thing, as you probably know. Okay, I'm going to say it's a good thing overall. As you probably know, California has been in a significant drought. The West Coast, really, other parts of the country as well. But California has gone through a significant drought over the past few years, to the point where it was a critical, getting close to sort of a water rationing level that we really hadn't seen in a long time, late 70s, actually, as a kid that grew up there. And what we finally started to see in wine, and this is what we're going to relate all this to, is really, you know, we had banner vintages, 2012, 2013, 2014, 2015 even. Those run are some of the best vintages that we're going to see out of California. 2007 was spectacular, but some of the best ones we're probably going to see in the last 20 years. And a lot of people are talking about 2016, of course, being last year, also being of excellent quality. Now, the jury's still out on that a little bit. There's always a little bit of spin that sometimes goes on with that. You know, everybody's going to tell you it's going to be a great vintage, depending on who you talk to. One of the things that started to happen in 2016 is that yields were down a bit, and actually quite a bit in some cases. And this is probably a bit of an effect of the drought in California, was that it hadn't really started to affect quality. And we don't need to go down that viticultural road exactly about what that means precisely, but there, you know, you can't quite irrigate as much in certain situations. A lot of where we're talking about here is in the Central Valley of California, where large, jug wine, if you will, is produced. And, you know, water was at a premium in that part of the world. And then even in other places in the more classic wine growing regions that we know, it became tougher to irrigate, less, and also less rainfall during the dormant season, which we're in now. We'll talk about that in a second. And I think we started to kind of finally, it's always a latent effect with vines. We're not talking about years and years and years, but you know, 1 or 2 years removed from a particular situation can relate to what actually ultimately ends up on the vine and then essentially in the bottle. And so what we had really in 2016 was that we started to see yields drop. And I think in a lot of ways, almost certainly, that this was due to the lack of rainfall, the drought conditions, and some of these things. Now, give us where we are here in 2017 and the massive storms that have just gone on in California, the Northwest, really, in general, over the past few days. And really, there's been a good amount of precipitation throughout the season. And that's why I say it's pretty much good news. 350 billion gallons of water have poured into California's biggest reservoirs. That's a lot of water. Now, California is also a big state, largest agricultural producer in the world, which obviously includes wine grapes. And, you know, a lot of water consumption goes on to make agriculture happen. I think it's something like 97-98% of all water in California is actually used by ag. And then the rest, you know, California is also the biggest state by populace in the country. So you can kind of, man, think about that a little bit. Biggest state by populace in the country. I don't even know how much is 60 million, maybe 45 million is in that range, something like that. I should probably know that. And then you look at ag, and that's 97-98% of the water use. So it's a huge, huge amount of water. 350 billion gallons is a lot. And what we're seeing is that really after all of these storms, it's quite remarkable, really, is that a lot of these reservoirs that have been down to the point where they are historically down to levels where, and I think I mentioned this yesterday on Tim's show, you were seeing cars that were probably ditched 30 years ago in these reservoirs sitting down there. And now, you know, what we're seeing is a lot of these smaller reservoirs are up to, in Northern California, let's be really clear about this, and there's sort of an 8-point area that we talk about between Lake Tahoe and Mount Shasta that they actually have seen more precipitation this winter than any time since 1922. That sounds remarkable as well, and that's great. 50 inches of precipitation, which normally at this point in the year, we're at 40 inches. That's the norm. We're 10 inches above the norm, which, you know, really in a historical perspective is not necessarily a ton. Now, it is running slightly above the 1982 and 83 and 97 and 98 El Nino years, which were, I was there for both of those, quite remarkable, really, in what you saw. Those were massive El Nino years, lots of flooding, and that's actually what's going on right now. Now, what we see in Northern California is that we see a lot of these reservoirs are small ones are actually up to capacity, and that's great. So they've kind of filled back up. I'll give you a couple good examples. And I know here, if you're listening in Louisiana and you're listening in New Orleans, this may not sound like a lot. In Contra Costa County, which is east of San Francisco, 4.5 inches of rain, 3.25 inches of rain in Alameda County, in Arinda, San Francisco, and parts of Oakland saw 2.5 inches of rain. Doesn't sound like a lot, but for those places, that's in a 24-hour period just on January 8th. That's a huge amount of rain for that area in particular, which is not necessarily well equipped to handle this. So a couple things to point out with wine, and this is where I'm going with some of the questions that I get asked, is we have seen this rain come in, the precipitation filling smaller reservoirs, which is great. That's going to help out irrigation. It's going to help out a lot with actually some of the natural progress of the vines. This is one of the questions that I got today, is that what does that mean? All this rainfall, because what we may not know is that a lot of rain, if it happens during the growing season with wine, is that when you start to get bud break, when the grain starts to come out of the vines, and then also when what we call set is when the fruit sets and the fruit starts to pop out of the vines, if you get a lot of precipitation, that can actually do damage to the vines. It will tamp down the yields, can actually mess with quality, and can even affect the vines for the following year, which that does happen quite a bit. We see that quite often. if we're going to get all this rain, this is the best time to get that rain, okay? Because right now, for the most part, the vines are dormant. Again, we're talking about California here and the West Coast. The vines are dormant. They go into sort of a winter hibernation mode, and then they start to come back depending on heat, which is going to be another question here, and I'll get to that in a second too. But you know they're dormant right now, so if there's going to be a time, and there's flooding in Napa, wineries in Napa were closed over the weekend in certain parts of the area because roads were impassable, and some of the wineries even flooded for that matter. So, you know, short-term kind of problem. But if we're going to get all this rain, it's good right now because these vines are dormant, even though some are sitting in pools of water. Now, I'm not a viticulturalist, so what that actually means as far as, I don't think there's really a potential for long-term damage to the vines. This stuff's going to drain off, things like that. This is the best time for this to happen in particular. So that's kind of good news. Now, what actually happened in 2014, we had a pretty good amount of rain coming in through this part of the year out there in 2014. This is during the heart of the drought, of course. And well, then all of a sudden in January, it all stopped. And we didn't really make the progress that we thought we were going to make out there. One of the things that California depends on for irrigation and agriculture is the snowpack. So when precipitation comes in, those storms come in off the Pacific Ocean, and they hit the Sierra Nevada, those mountains right there on the east coast of California, they kind of hit a barrier, and that precipitation starts to drop and, you know, fall out of the sky, and then there's the snowpack. So we get this precipitation that actually fills in the watersheds, fills in the reservoirs, and then what's really important is that snow ends up there. And as we move into spring and even sometimes in early summer, is that snow slowly melts and also replenishes the water supply in the reservoirs. And there's a couple key points here that move on from that. So if we shut off now, okay, in some of these small reservoirs, we're back to 100% capacity really in 1 year. I'll give a good example. The San Luis Reservoir, which is the fifth largest reservoir in the state, and it's located between Gilroy and Los Banos, which is about 30, 40 miles south of San Jose. It was 10% full in August. It is now 66% full. So that's gone up 134 feet. Good news. But it's still only 66% full. Now, what also happens in agriculture as well in the Central Valley of California is that, yes, we're drawing water off the reservoirs, but a lot of this stuff is coming, especially for small agricultural operations and other things, it's coming out of groundwater. It's not just the reservoirs. It's the aquifers that are sitting underneath. The snowpack helps replenish the aquifers. And the aquifers are down because people have been pumping out water for a number of years. Again, especially in the Central Valley where ag is big, not just wine grapes, bulk wine grapes, as we're talking about, but all kinds of the other agricultural components that we talk about and products, I should say, that we talk about here in the country. It's going to be a ways really until that aquifer level comes back up. Now, a couple things. We're talking about Northern California here, and so we're kind of getting better, not going to have drought conditions on that level of needing to water rationing, do some of these things in the short term in Northern California. Everything that I'm reading at this point, though, if we talk about Southern California, really moving from the Central Coast, a little bit at the bottom of the Central Coast, all the way down further, they're still in drought conditions. So let me give you a couple numbers of things that we're talking about here. So we have maybe a dozen or so major reservoirs out there in California that, you know, again, serve the people and again, serve agriculture. So Shasta is a really good example. That's up in Northern California, about three quarters of the way up the state. Shasta, as of midnight on Sunday, is at 76% capacity. Now let's skip all the way down to, say, New Melones, which is in Central California, pretty much due east of the Bay Area, only 29% capacity. We get down to someplace like Pine Flat, which is east of Fresno, 36%. Castaic, which is between north of Los Angeles, right around the Santa Barbara area, 60%. A lot of wine regions there, friends, that we're talking about that actually need the water, the precipitation from there. Some of that's going to come off the snowpack. Some of that comes down the California Canal, these sorts of things. But I think there's, and the reason I'm talking about all this right now is that I think a lot of people are thinking, oh, we've had this one banner year. These reservoirs have come back. They're full. Life is good. Now, we're going to probably be able to remove some of the drought conditions in California. It's going to help out farmers. It's going to help out the wine industry moving forward. But it's going to be, it needs to be sort of a, not a complete solution, just saying it's all bets are off, droughts off everywhere. There's still drought in Southern California. That needs to be rectified. So some of our friends down, say, in the Paso Robles wine region, Santa Barbara wine region, even parts of San Diego, more wine growing out in that direction, San Bernardino, some of these places, they're not out of the woods yet. So one banner year to this point does not really solve the problem necessarily. And it's, we're getting there. It's a good thing if the wine shuts off. The wine's not going to shut off. God, I hope not. If the rain shuts off like it did in 2014, we're still really not out of the woods. So the point is, what we need to happen is we need more precipitation to come in. And I'm not trying to be insensitive to some of the flooding conditions. I know that there were at least 3 fatalities. I was talking to my lovely mom who lives in Southeast Oregon, originally from, lived in California where I grew up for a long time. And she was visiting friends in the Bay Area, had to divert because there was a tree across the road. I mean, there's a lot of stuff going on that's messed up in the short term. What we need is we need more of that precipitation to come in. This was an exceptional situation, friends, where all this precipitation was coming in the so-called Pineapple Express, which is subtropical precipitation. And lots of times what happens is it comes in January and it just rains on the snow. All that snow melts. All that water comes in. The watershed can't handle it. Ground saturated. It runs off. We don't get to collect it for ag. We don't get to collect it for the wine industry. We don't get to collect it to water our lawns or drink, water, take showers in California. So I just want everybody to know this is a little bit of a cautionary tale that what we're talking about here is that good news in the medium term. I'm going to say that in the long term, we got a ways to go. In the short term, a lot of damage, a lot of flooding, lost money, these sorts of things. I guess there's a silver lining in there is that after several years in a row of drought, at least in Northern California, things have gotten quite a bit better. I'll continue to report on this, what it means to the wine industry. If I get some reports about any sort of damage to vines and these sorts of things, we'll talk about that as well. And then we'll talk about where this goes from there. Friends, coming back here to the NOLA Drink Show. We're going to take a little break. We're going to be right back.
Look at my king, all dressed in red. I go one day. I bet you $5.
Hey, New Orleans, Jack Jelenko here, local wine guy. Want a great alternative to Over Oak Chardonnay? Try Yamhill Valley Vineyards Pinot Blanc, a wonderfully balanced white wine from the oldest family estate in McMinnville, Oregon, in the Willamette Valley. It's round and ripe like a Chardonnay, but without the heavy oak and sweetness of big commercial corporate Chardonnays. Yamhill Valley Vineyard Pinot Blanc, a great value under $20. Ask for it wherever you buy wine. Cheers.
Are you tired of drinking the same wines? Switch it up. Try the Kreutz Family Cellars wine. Kreutz Family Cellars is a small, family-owned winery in Sonoma County that makes wines from some of the most prized vineyards throughout Northern California. Each bottle of Kreutz Family Cellars wines has a magnolia on the label. The magnolia is a symbol of the family's southern roots and their way of life. True, honest, and fun. Look for the magnolia and pick up a bottle of Kreutz Family Cellars wines today.
Time for lunch? We've got you covered at Sobu.
Chef Juan Carlos whipped up special 2-course lunches that start at $14.
Try our Creole Cuban sandwich and pair it with a bowl of our gumbo.
Of course, Sobu's full menu is also available.
And don't forget Sobu's version of Commander's Palace 25-cent martinis.
Available Monday through Friday, 11:30 a.m. to 3:30 p.m.
Join us at Sobu for our speedy lunch at 310 Charter Street in the Quarter.
Complimentary parking next door at the W Hotel.
Sobu, life is meant to be lived, not endured.
Springtime in New Orleans is beckoning us back on our front porches, favorite patio bars, and restaurants. Dickie Brennan's Tableau offers some of the best outdoor dining in the French Quarter. Soak in the beautiful weather on the balcony overlooking Jackson Square or by the whispering fountain in the cozy courtyard. Tableau also offers an amazing happy hour from 2 to 6 p.m. every day of the week, offering half-price beer and wine on tap, $5 classic cocktails, and discounted small plates. For menus, reservations, and more, visit TableauFrenchQuarter.com. Tableau is located at 616 St. Peter Street.
All right, everybody, welcome back to the NOLA Drink Show. Thanks for tuning in today here on a Thursday. Brian Diaz here with you as always every Thursday, the unofficial start to the weekend, the official start of a carnival season. Here we go. Talked a little bit about that. Keep saying here we go. We always say here we go here in New Orleans, playing a little My Indian Red, the Dr. John version, one of the finest versions there is out there, of course. There is always a whole lot of stuff going on here in town. We'll continue to talk about that during upcoming shows and all of that. Mardi Gras is, as it always is, Fat Tuesday on a Tuesday. You know, I had somebody ask me some years ago, and they said, you know, what day of the week is Thanksgiving on this year? Yeah, Thursday. It's pretty much always on a Thursday. Mardi Gras is pretty much always on a Tuesday. That's kind of how that works. If you didn't know, I think if you live here, you know, maybe not if you don't. Anyway, so it is February 28th. So that's kind of nice. It is a little bit later this year. That gives us some time to breathe here after the holiday season. Last year, I think it was, if I remember right, February 9th. So a little bit earlier, and we've kind of had a little bit of miserable weather. It didn't really rain so much as the past year, as I recall, previous year, quite a bit. Yeah, so, you know, we move into this sort of season where we go from the holidays here in New Orleans, and then, of course, we move into Mardi Gras season. And things kind of kicked off. We had a little bit of foul weather that I think jacked up some of the parades on January 6th. I know that the Joan of Arc parade was rescheduled and ran on January 7th on the, I guess that's the 13th day of Christmas. There you go. It's supposed to be on the 12th day of Christmas, 12th night, whatever. But anyway, you know, we kind of move forward. And the nice thing about having a little bit of room is that that allows us to maybe squeeze a few more things in. So there's a new festival that's actually going to happen in Central City on February 11th. And it's called, it's called Marley Fest or Mardi Gras Jerk Chicken Festival. And it's kind of the compatriot to the NOLA Caribbean Fest, which we do every June. I think that's kind of new too. That takes place on Aretha Castle Haley Boulevard. And I don't know exactly when that'll be in June this year, but that's coming up February 11th, Mardi Gras Jerk Chicken Festival. And that's going to be a lot of fun. I'm actually looking forward to it. It's just on Saturday, the 11th. And it's going to have, you know, a jerk chicken, of course, the quintessential chicken barbecue dish from Jamaica. I believe Bob Marley's birthday was right around that time. I want to say something like, where is it? February 6th or something. So celebrate Bob Marley's birthday. There's going to be some Bloody Marys going on. There's going to be a lot of stuff going on. So that's going to be a lot of fun. We'll talk about that a little bit further, but I'm a big fan of Jamaican jerk chicken, and I'm a big fan of Bob Marley. So I think this, and I'm a big fan of New Orleans. So we're going to put all that, we're going to make a roux out of this, and we're going to do that here in town. So mark that on your calendar. Brand spanking new festival that we got going on. We are never short of festivals here, friends, in New Orleans. We're in Carnival. We got all that going on. Here comes festival season. It just all kind of rolls from here. Friends, next week on the show is going to be a good time. I'm going to have, who am I having on? I am having on my good friend, Janice Sanders from Fantesca Wines out in Napa. That's going to be a fun conversation. You say, why a Napa winery? Well, the owners of the winery have a connection to Crew of Mid-City, and they're going to be part of the Crew of Mid-City Mardi Gras Parade. And then my good friends, Bo and Matt, who run probably this, one of the finest blogs that you'll ever see out there for home kitchen and drinks. That's going to be a lot of fun. So tune in next Thursday. I'll be in tomorrow for Tim, my good buddy there on the Dine, Wine, and Spirit Show. And I will also be in on Monday for Tim. We got good stuff lined up then. So, hey, friends, come on back. Come on back tomorrow. Come on back next week for the NOLA Drink Show. And until then, cheers, y'all.